Hi, folks. This is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 151. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars, amps, and pedals, and music, I'm just talking about, you know, things from my experience and my opinion, what I've learned over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Check out the show notes at theguitarpodcast.com. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Last, not least, go to theguitarpodcast.com and sign up for email alerts. Then you get emails letting you know when a new episode's been released, other timely information regarding the show. All right, let's get to it. I'm going to talk about today is some of the stuff that I've acquired and passed through my hands over the last year or so, and how I've kind of gotten to have some Les Paul fever, I guess you'd say. So anyway, had to minimize this window here. I know that's really important to the listener that I'm doing that. Anyway, so, you know, I think we all get on eBay and Craigslist and Reverb and look for different things that kind of strike our fancy. And something that I've always been a big fan of is the Made in Japan Fender guitars, like and especially the E series, the ones done in the 80s, and the Squires and you know, that sort of thing. I think Fender Japan, especially 80s and 90s and probably even now, just really high quality stuff, lower cost. But as you know, the 70s and 80s Fender, as well as Gibson and a lot of other companies, were kind of not putting out the best of instruments. Quality control wasn't quite there. Maybe they were trying some things, some experimental things that weren't as well received by the public. And so that's how we get, and I think we've talked about this in other episodes, earlier episodes, about the lawsuit era kind of guitars of the late 70s and early 80s, and made in legendary factories. And then I'm gonna butcher the names of them, like the Matsumoko and Fujigen, and I think there's another one, but it starts with a T, I think. That I'm just gonna totally butcher it. Even worse if I even try to say what the name of the factory is. But those three factories produced a lot of great guitars through the 80s and into the 90s as well. And you know, like one of my first really good guitars was an Aria Pro 2. It was a Nighthawk. I think it was a Nighthawk. And I got it for Christmas in 1985. Yeah, 85, folks. And I think it was made in the Matsumoku factory, and it played great and way better than the thing that I had before that had a broken headstock that I got from a guy at school that was nicknamed Ace. And I paid like $25 for that guitar, but I played the crap out of it, and it wouldn't stay in tune, and but it didn't matter. I was going through the physical movements of actually playing, and that was what felt like it was really important to me. And a lot of times I wouldn't plug it in because it wouldn't hold its tune, and it'd get really aggravating. So I would just kind of go through the motions. And then when I got that Aria Pro 2, I did start plugging into my awesome little Gorilla amp with the tube stack switch on it, and it would stay in tune, and I could play on it, and things sounded right. When I played Zeppelin and bent notes and things, it didn't go out of tune. So I really loved that guitar. And the second electric guitar I bought, I sold that one to a friend down the road, Brian. And I took that money and the money I had earned from baling hay that summer and took that to the guitar shop and got another Aria Pro 2, a little higher end than the one I'd previously gotten, but it was more of your 80s Eddie Van Halen or Charvel type single, one humbucker in the bridge, one volume knob, and a Floyd Rose licensed tremolo, double locking tremolo system, and maple fretboard. And I just played that guitar like crazy, and I still have it hanging on the wall. And it, you know, you could probably see. I might have to show some photos of that guitar, where it is now, what it's become. I don't have any photos. I don't think I have any photos of it handy of when it was before I started modifying it heavily, but I routed out the neck position to throw a single coil pickup in there, like George Lynch, because George Lynch was like one of my heroes of the 80s, and put some switches in there because I loved what I put some toggle switches to turn the pickups on and off, because that's what, you know, the Charvel Model 4 and 6 had, instead of the five-way or three-way switch, probably a five-way switch. And I just like those toggle switches, and you can use them as kill switches too, which is really cool. So I did that to it, and I did some sanding on the bottom cutaway for more reach, because I play up there so much, and that's like the Steve Vai influence. And then I painted it. I had it painted teal green in, I want to say it was 1992, because that's when Chevy put out those Camaros and Berettas that were in that cool teal green. And man, that color just hit me right in the face, man. I love that color. And so I said, I want my guitar to be that color. So now it's that color. So it went from being black to this, a black single humbucker in the bridge, and to this thing. So I'll post a photo of it up there. If I could find another photo of it from way, way back when, I'll scan that in and get it up there too, so you see that. But anyway, wow, I rambled on a little bit about that, about my first two decent guitars. But anyway, I've owned some Made in Japan guitars over the years. A buddy of mine, Andy, has a Surf Green 54 reissue Strat. I think it's a 93 or 94, and it's an MIJ. It's not a Crafted in Japan. Not that, you know, the Crafted in Japans aren't great, because I've had one of those too, and I think it was a 62 reissue, and it was a fantastic guitar as well. I really, really liked it. But anyway, he kind of turned me on a little more about those Made in Japan Strats. So I started getting some of those, and another friend of mine, Marcus, he's gotten into them as well, so much to the point where I like to say that, you know, if Marcus sees a Made in Japan Strat, it's not going to get left behind. So we, you know, jokingly say to him whenever he's picking up another Strat, it's like, no Strat left behind. So anyway, I've gone through a handful of them over the years. Right now, the only Made in Japan Strat that I have right now is the research that I've done on the serial number. It's an E-Series Squire, of all things, that was made in Japan, and I think it was in 1989. Got it fairly cheap on Reverb. There's some fret dressing that needed to be done. So, and I'm not going to remember that name of that shop across town. String Theory, that's it. String Theory, down in Fountain Square, Indianapolis. They dressed up the frets for me so that I can bend all over the place and have decent action while I was doing that. And I put Lindy Fralin 54s in there, and just put a Vitamin Q cap in there, the 047. And the guitars always sounded great. I thought the original pickups were really pretty decent to begin with, but then I found on Craigslist a guy had the 54s, and I was, hey, you know, decent price. I'll just see what those sound like in there. So basically the Squires had a heart transplant as far as the power in electronics, I didn't have to do anything with the potentiometers. They're decent. They're full size 250K pots. It has the import 5-way switch, which I think is going bad. I need to pop that out and see if maybe there's a solder point that's not allowing the bridge pickup to go again or something. I'll figure that out. But the thing is, it's one of those things where you get a guitar that has good bones, like a house. Talk about a house having good bones. You know, it just needs maybe a little TLC. This one didn't need a lot of TLC, honestly. I just thought, hey, you know, maybe upgrade a few items to it, you know, kind of like get a house, maybe put some new windows in it or add a deck to it or whatever. It's kind of what I did with this, with make, you know, putting in Fralin pickups and the Vitamin Q cap. So the thing, you know, if before that, acoustically playing, that's what I always do with any guitar, any electric guitar I get before I ever plug it in, is to find out, okay, how's the wood sound? How do the strings react with the, you know, I mean, if they're new enough strings, if they're not, you know, rusty dead strings, you're not going to really get a good idea about them. But anyway, before I plug it in and let the amp and the pickups influence my thoughts on what the guitar really sounds like, I always strum it acoustically to hear the tone of the wood, its response, its resonance. It's natural sustain without the help of the pickups or electronics. So, you know, that guitar had good tone right from the start. So it has good bones, a good starting point. So I remember plugging it in with the original pickups and going, oh, it just sounds the way a Strat's supposed to sound. It doesn't sound tinny. It has a nice bell-like tone. So really loved that. But like I said, well, why not? You know, maybe do a few upgrades to it. So all in all, I don't have a ton of money in the guitar after the pickups and the fretwork. But I probably have about as much. I mean, I thought I got it for a pretty good deal whenever I bought it on Reverb about a year and a half ago. I think it actually might have been closer to 2 years ago. Anyway, I probably have as much in it as what it's worth now, or what it was worth when I bought it. But all I've ever heard is if you upgrade the pickups or whatever, you're not going to really, it's not like a house where if you put a pool in the backyard, you're not going to really get that out of it. You know, that upgrade, like if you buy a house for like $100,000 and then you put a deck on the back of it and put a pool in, well, that does actually raise the value of the property. Whereas with a guitar, in my opinion, it makes it more attractive for somebody to buy it, but I don't know that people are going to actually pay up for that. But anyway, so a little over a year ago, I bought a, what was it? A 2014 Fender Hot Rod Telecaster. It had a Seymour Duncan mini humbucker in the neck. And it's basically a 52 reissue with some upgrades. And a great guitar. Just loved it, man. I really love Tellies, but I can never seem to hold on to Tellies, and I don't ask me why. But I had that guitar for 9 months or so, and I thought, well, I'm not playing it a whole lot. I really like it a lot. I mean, it's really great condition, great case, all the case candy with it and everything, but I wound up trading it for a Goodsell Custom 33, and I might have had to throw in just a little, maybe like $100 or something like that. I don't remember. Anyway, really cool. Surf green, Tolex. It was a little piggyback combo. The head looked like basically a surf green Plexi or JTM 45, but with only three knobs on the front. You know, basically your tone, volume, and gain. And then a 212 cabinet with Weber something or other, and then a warehouse speaker. I don't remember which one, what that was, but amp sounded great and everything. But somebody had added some knob in the back that had bypassed the volume on the front. And so the volume on the back was the, I don't know. So I emailed Richard Goodsell in Atlanta, Georgia, and asked him about it before I got the amp and said, hey, you know, it's got this knob back there. And he said, well, you know, it might have something to do with like maybe going to the half volume or whatever. Send me some photos. And because see, they're usually, what, 33 watts. And then if you hit the half, it takes it down to 17 or whatever. And so at that time, when this amp was produced, it didn't have the half switch. So he thought maybe it had something to do with that. And actually it did, because all the new custom 33s have the half switch to get down to 17 watts. Well, I sent him the photo and he looked at that and he said, I don't know what in the world's going on there. And this is really awesome what Richard Goodsell offered. He said, hey, ship it down to me here in Atlanta and I'll go through it, get it back to original specs, go through the whole thing, be sure everything's cool, and I'll ship it back to you. You just pay shipping both ways. And I'm going, wow, okay, no problem. So I shipped it down to him. We exchanged it. We emails back and forth and a couple phone calls. And man, what a fantastic guy. I mean, basically, you know, with shipping, I got the amp back and it was basically a brand new amp. I mean, other than, you know, little nicks here or there on the Tolex from being used. I mean, people used it. I mean, it not like it'd been on the road or anything, but because it, on a, say on a 5-point scale, like one being it's been on the road and it really shows it, it's been road hard and put up wet, or a 5 being like showroom quality, it was probably about a 4, 4.5. So it was really pretty good. And so I got that amp, played on it a little bit, liked it. I had a friend who seemed to be interested in that, and I thought, well, maybe he'll want it too. And you know, because you know, things are nice to have, and sometimes it's nice to just let them move on down the line to someone who might want them more. And so that was kind of my perspective on that amp. And well, things didn't align there, so then I put it up on Reverb, put it up on Craigslist here, and I think I might have had it on eBay too, but anyway, I had it up for, I don't know, a couple weeks or whatever. Went into my favorite guitar shop in Plainfield, Dave's Six Strings Down, just love the place, and here in Indiana. And we were talking, I'm talking with Dave, and he said, hey, is that Surf Green Goodsell on Craigslist? Andy's our mutual friend. And I said, no, it's mine. And he talked about that a little bit and his interest in it. And one thing led to another. And I thought, well, man, he might be interested in that. And just kind of kept that tucked away in the back of my mind, my feeble little mind. Anyway, Dave had two Les Pauls hanging on the wall. One, I want to say, is a 2004 R9, which is a Gibson Les Paul 59 reissue, and it was magnificent, and I didn't want to touch it because it looked beautiful, and especially after he told me the price, I would have, if I'd fallen in love with it, I'd played enough reissue 59s at his place to start going through the math of what I'd have to sell and how much I would have to, you know, what all I'd have to do to come up with all the money to be able to make that deal happen. And too many things I was way attached to would have to go to be able to pull that off. So, I mean, yeah, $3,500, man, that's a lot of coin, man. Anyway, so I looked at it, I was like, that's really pretty. I'm not going to touch that. But right next to it was a Orville by Gibson, not Orville, but Orville by Gibson Les Paul. And I go, well, that's interesting. that looks really cool. And I started looking it over and I go, man, that really looks like a 58 reissue. And I talked to Dave and he's like, man, that guitar is the real deal. And he said, it's got the long neck tenon, 57 classics. He goes, it's got all the right appointments of a reissue 58. You know, he agreed with me without saying, yeah, it's a reissue 58. So I'm going, man, this guitar is really cool. And what he was asking for that guitar aligned with what I was asking for the amp. And so I think you get where my wheels were turning. So I leave, and I don't usually just jump on something. I got to dig and research and then talk myself out of or into, making a transaction work. So I go, I'm talking with my friend Andy about it, and he had one, 10 years ago, maybe more, and just loved the thing, sold it, and has regretted it ever since. And it was an Orville by Gibson, just like mine, or just like this one I'm talking about. I don't want to give away too much. I think you know where I'm going, though. But anyway, my friend Andy wound up selling that guitar to a younger guy who was getting going in a traveling band and wanted a higher quality guitar, but without spending a ton of money on it. And at the time, you know, they weren't, you know, 10 years ago, they weren't quite what, you know, the value is of them today. But anyway, the guy decided to spin the guitar. I think he spun the guitar around his neck, and I don't remember anybody spinning Les Pauls around their neck, because it was usually like the Kramers and things like that. But guy did it and did not have strap locks on it. So I think you know where this is going, especially if you've ever seen the Brian Wampler video where Travis Feaster dares him to spin the guitar around his neck and it didn't have strap locks on it and it went and broke his neck. Well, yeah, that's what happened to that guitar. It broke the headstock right where Gibsons usually break. And so that got repaired. So, I mean, that's kind of heartbreaking, but you know, the guitar, he said it still works fine, but it'll always have that stigma of having a repaired headstock. So, because anytime you're buying a Gibson or that style of a headstock where it's, you know, three on one side, three on the other, and it has that 15, 16 or 17 degree or 14 degree angle back and without the volute, well, I guess with or without the volute, I would still ask, you know, is there a neck repair? Is there a headstock repair? You know, it's kind of one of those stigmas for Gibsons. I love Gibsons, but I'm telling you, that's one of the things you got to look out for with them whenever you're buying a used one, amongst other things like the Chipsons, the Chinese fakes that can fool a lot of people, and they're getting only better at it. Anyway, so I start doing some research with my friend, and we come to find out that, you know, the Orvilles are moderately priced, and they're pretty good guitars, but the Orville by Gibsons, they had basically three models. There's the Black Beauty. I think it was the LPC 57B. It's a Les Paul custom 57 reissue black, like a Black Beauty, which totally made sense. And coincidentally, when I'm talking with him, he goes, man, I just saw one pop up on Reverb for a really good price. I couldn't pass it up, and I thought the guy would decline my offer, and because I think he offered him something pretty low, and the guy just took it. And so he got that guitar, and we're looking about the guitar I was looking at. It's a Cherry Sunburst. Has 58 looks, appointments, everything about it says it's a plain top with just some mild figuring, very mild figuring on it. And based on the year, it was a 94. Based on everything with it, and then the tags that came with it too, it's a LPS at 57C. So LPS for Les Paul Standard. And 5.7 for 1957, C for Cherry Sunburst finish. funny thing about that is that 57, they weren't doing sunbursts in the Les Paul Standard. They did pull some off the line as prototypes to see how that would work, because everything was either a gold top or a Les Paul custom in black. So it was either black or gold top. I may be wrong, but I think I'm right on all this stuff. I love Gibson. I'm not as versed as some of the guys that you'll run into on my Les Paul forum, which is a fantastic forum, and it's kind of my source of truth on a lot of things and regarding Gibson and Les Pauls. And I've read a couple books, but you know, this is, you know, if you don't quite buy it, then you can go and do some research. But 58 and 59 and part of 60 were when they did have the sunbursts, and the 57 was a gold top, typically known as a gold top. I don't know why Orville by Gibson said 57C instead of 58C, because it looks like a 58. But anyway, that being said, it does have a long neck tenon and 57 classics, and that look like they're PAFs, and nice rosewood fretboard, nice action, very lively tone when you strum it acoustically without plugging it into an amp. Just good bones, so to speak. It has, I think, a 3 or 4 piece back, but a 2 piece book matched top. So that I guess my only complaint about it is the back isn't 1 piece like my Les Paul custom. So anyway, that guitar is talking to me and I'm thinking about it and I'm going, man, that's really nice. And so I'm talking to Dave and I go, hey, would you, you know, if you're interested in that good soul, you want to trade up, we'll work out something. And he was like, yeah, bring it in. We'll check it out. We'll see. And so I brought it in the next day and he looked it over and we made the deal. Got a nice Orville by Gibson. It feels great. And then I A-B'd it. You can look on my YouTube channel and you can see it's kind of a sloppy video. It's done on my phone. So the audio, you might not be able to tell a ton of difference, but I think it's enough. Where I A-B my 1987 Les Paul Custom, which has Shaws in the neck and bridge, the original pickups, and I did wire it up in the 50s wiring schematic. Just a minute, I got to fix something. It's always funny to me whenever I wind up saying, hold on just a minute, when you guys really, through editing, you don't notice a whole lot of a gap between whenever I have to stop and take care of something and whenever I get back to running my mouth about guitars and stuff. Where was I? Oh yeah, I was A-B-ing that classic or the custom. And I did put new old stock Bumblebee 0.022 400 capacitors in the wiring. It replaced the original ceramic capacitors, so it would have more of a classic tone. Anyway, it has a much mellower tone than the Orville by Gibson, and I'm just going to refer to that as the 58 reissue. I know it says 57C. We can call it 57C or whatever, but man, everything about it tells me it's a 58 reissue. Or maybe an extremely late 57. Okay, maybe that's where they're getting at. It's extremely late because they didn't want to get it too confused with their 59 R9, because they do make a 59 reissue that's really pretty sweet. Anyway, so I A-B those. And the Orville is more lively, brighter, just a lot of things that are really cool about it. So much to the point where I was like, maybe I should consider, you know, I love the neck pickup on my custom. I mean, you just can't beat it. It just sounds fantastic. really mellow, smooth, thick, great. The bridge is mellower than the Orville, which was very lively and in your face. But I thought, you know, with a tone knob, I could roll back the tone a little bit on the other. And do I need two Les Pauls? And a couple days pass, and finally I'm taking photos, and a guitar that I said that I bought in 2001 that I said I would never get rid of, and wound up on the gear page and on the indie gear page exchange, whatever, I don't remember what we call it, but we go there and look for gear that's local gear that's for sale on Craigslist. And I don't believe I put it on Reverb because I didn't really want to deal with shipping it, because it's, well, I wasn't necessarily going all in with selling it. But anyway, I started up a firestorm, basically. I think I broke the page with comments about the guitar and questions about the guitar. And then I was getting texts through Facebook, texts on my phone, emails, just all sorts of conversations. And I finally got to the point where it was like, okay, I found a guy near Bloomington, Indiana, who was really interested in the guitar, but he had another guitar that he would trade me and throw in some cash. And it was a Les Paul traditional plus. So basically had a double A top, iced tea sunburst, which is close to the honey burst, which I love the honey burst. I really love the faded cherry burst to the honey. Just love it. And so it's a beautiful looking guitar. And so we were almost there on making the trade. And so I'm telling my wife about it, and she puts the kibosh. She puts the smack down on it. She's like, nope, you're not selling that guitar. You cannot sell. I mean, a little backstory. Any guitar that I really like a lot, once I sell it, I always have seller's remorse. And she's gotten tired over the years of hearing me cry about guitars that I've sold and wish I still had. I did not cry too much about the selling the hot rod or trading off the hot rod Telly, but there was a 1998 52 reissue Telecaster that I got from Dave years ago, and man, that's the best Telecaster I've ever owned. And I wound up selling it to put together my analog, all analog pedal board, other than my Nova delay, which is digital, of course. But anyway, that she knew that I'd be crying over selling the custom, because it's a beautiful guitar and I've had it for 16 years, and it's just been kind of a part of me. And she just put the kibosh on it, and then, you know, she was saying, no, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. You'll regret it. It would be bad. Don't do it. I don't support this. So on and so forth. And I said, well, let's sleep on it and think on it. And then the next morning we're talking, and then she says the thing that those of you who are married, you never really want to hear your wife say this, because you know what this really means. She said, just do what you want. And I was like, oh no. She said, just do what you want, meaning I'm going to be in trouble. This is not going to go well for old Lauren here. So, I said, I know what that means. So then I had to let the guy know. I was like, nah, this isn't really going to work out. And he totally understood. He was totally cool about it. And he, you know, he's married. He's like, I like five Les Pauls. But looking at all these Les Pauls and all the comments on mine and reading into them, I'm just like, man, I love Les Pauls. I love Gibsons. And, you know, with their flaws, with their company's issues and all that aside, man, I just love a Les Paul. Just really love a Les Paul. But anyway, a couple days later, a guy texts me and says, hey, man, I'm still I just got another guitar and I kind of need to move the one that I was going to trade to you. Do you know, if you know anybody who's interested, I want to sell it for this. So I reached out to my buddy Marcus and told him about it and sort of kind of made a love connection. So now that guitar that I was really hoping to get is still kind of in the family, and he brought it over after he got it and it looks great. It has some dings here and there and probably could use some Seymour Duncan Antiquity pickups to make it sound better plugged in, but unplugged has good bones, man. It's a good guitar. Really like it a lot. But anyway, so all this path has gotten me to where I've kind of got Les Paul fever, and I can't get enough of looking at posts on my Les Paul forum or any of the Les Paul pages on Facebook or anytime. So now Facebook actually knows they have the algorithm that knows what I'm looking at the most. And so it's just hammering me with photos and posts about Les Pauls and comments and questions and different things like that. So I just thought I'd kind of share that stuff about the, this path that I've been on here recently that's gotten me to really being into Les Pauls. But I'm telling you, if you see an Orville by Gibson that's a cherry sunburst or the Black Beauty, they'll have the 57 reissue pickups in them. Man, don't hesitate. If you can get them, if you can get them for under $1,300 bucks, I know that sounds a lot when you're thinking Orville. If it's a regular Orville, you shouldn't pay much more than like $600 or $700 at the time of production of this podcast. But they may go up, they may go down. But whenever it comes to the Orville by Gibsons, man, those are the real deal. Especially if they are if it's that 57B or 57C, basically they're reissues. They're going to have the long neck tenon. They're going to have all the great appointments that made those classics. They're not going to be weight relieved. They're not going to have that honeycomb. They're not going to have holes drilled in it. I believe that my custom is honeycomb. I think they started doing that in 83 or 84, somewhere around in there. And mine's an 87. I haven't had it x-rayed, which would be super cool to do, to take it to the airport or something like that. Or somebody I know who is a radiologist who would x-ray it for me and let me know for sure what lies underneath that cap. But, these are not weight relieved. It's good stuff. I mean, I highly recommend those Orville by Gibsons. Right now, I think you can get one from anywhere from $900 to $1,400. And last I knew, the trend was going on an upward trend on the value of those guitars. So if you want something that's going to sound great, look great, and you want to play, I mean, like a real player, and don't mind taking it out, and you're not going to have like $2,000 in the guitar, I highly recommend those. I liked it so well that it almost had me sell my custom, so that had been like a part of me for 16 years. So that's my little PSA. Don't say I didn't warn you when you play one. They are out there on Reverb here and there. I don't see too many of them on eBay or my local Craigslist. And I look around at other Craigslists, like up in Chicago or Detroit, Cincinnati, Nashville, other local cities right around here that, if somebody in Columbus, Ohio, sorry, folks, another track popped up. I had to edit right there. But yeah, if there's another local town that wouldn't be too far for me to drive, which, if the deal was worth the drive, like Andy and I drove up to, up to like North Central Indiana, Northeast Indiana, not quite to Fort Wayne or anything like that, but it was, north of Anderson. It was a good hour or so drive, for him to do a deal. And I was like, let's go along for the ride and visit and stuff and see some stuff. And if the guy had maybe some other stuff I might want to buy or trade or whatever, do some deals. So I'd say that's worth it. But yeah, I'm not seeing a whole lot of them on. I'm not seeing any of them on there. But you'll find them on Reverb. I have a regular search that'll alert me for or on my feed of all the Orville by Gibsons. Unfortunately, it'll surprise me once in a while. I'll see something and it'll be like, ooh, that's beautiful, and it's $600. That's awesome. But, oh, it's an Orville, not an Orville by Gibson. So then it's like, oh, well, you know, you have to keep your eyes open for them. So that's, you know, I guess I'm 41 minutes into the show talking about this stuff. And I thought I'd share that with y'all. I thought maybe you might like to hear about it. So I'm going to pretty much wrap it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. But email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the show notes page or Facebook or whatever you want to do if you liked what you heard today. Subscribe using iTunes and or whatever your podcast feeder is on your phone or computer or whatever the kids are using these days. And leave feedback on there too. I mean, good, bad, or indifferent. I finally, after all the years of doing this show, and I know there's been a delay, I'm not going to address that because nobody really wants to hear me whine about that. I do have some negative feedback on the iTunes feed, and so that's interesting. So hey, it is what it is, man, and I'm sure to each their own. You know, it's not gonna work for everybody, and I'm fine with that. And anyway, hope you all have a great day, and thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt reminding you to trust your ear. Signing off for the Guitar Podcast.